welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. On today's programme, we'll be visiting one of our neighbours, the Gallery of Everything, to find out about the alternative art that's currently adorning the walls of the former barbershop. But first of all, we're going to talk art in New York City. Joining us on the line from the Big Apple is Pak Pobrick, editor of the exhibition section at the Art Newspaper. Pak, a warm welcome to the show. Great to have you with us. Now, both of our exhibitions today are at the Met, where first we find work by German expressionist painter Max Beckmann. This show takes a look at the period of time that the painter spent in New York before his untimely death in 1950, when he had a heart attack on his way to one of his own exhibitions in the city. Pak, this is an acclaimed exhibition. Tell us a bit about the story, really, that it sets out to tell and whether you think it achieves that.
Yes, yeah, so it does have a kind of curious backstory. As you mentioned, he does die on his way to the Met to see a painting of his that had just been installed. It was a self-portrait in a blue jacket. And he used to take these long walks through New York. And he's German-born, but he spent the last year in New York. And he's on his way, basically, to the Met to see this work. And on the corner of 69th Street and Central Park West, he has a heart attack and dies. So he never sees this work. And basically, the conceit of the show is that he has a connection to New York, not just because he died here, but also because his work had been collected by collectors who lived here and who supported his work even before he'd gotten here.
Pak, tell us, because obviously one of the many reasons that Beckmann is so well known, perhaps, is that it's interesting how his career changed. He was so celebrated, of course, in Germany, one of the most celebrated living artists, but he was viewed as a degenerate artist under the sort of Nazi era. So does this show try and explain his own personal journey, or does it talk more about his time, albeit brief, in New York City?
It's really about him in New York. The earliest work in the show is from 1932, which is significantly earlier than his arrival in New York. He comes here in 1949. But this work had been bought by a collector whose name is Franz Hirschland, who is also a German-born collector, but who lived in New York. And really, the collectors here did support him. There's another one whose name is Abby Aldrich Rockefeller, who bought works by him, and also the first director of the MoMA, Alfred Barr, had purchased a large triptych by Beckmann in 1942. So there was a kind of interest in his work here, but overall, the truth is that his relationship to the city is pretty tenuous. He's only here for about a year and a half before he dies, and while he's here, he's not really part of the scene in any substantial sense. The artists who are really establishing themselves in the 1940s when he's in America are the abstract expressionists, and he's much older than they are, about 25, 30 years older than they are. And he's not a part of that crowd. He's not even looking at their work. He's not interested in it. And he's really a much more conservative artist than what's happening in New York. He's sticking to the figure. He's interested in different kinds of conversations and in different traditions. So the conceit is a little bit strained, but it is true that there is something to the idea that he does get something out of New York. He really does love it here. He finds it a beautiful city, and he loves walking around, and there is some truth to his connection here.
Indeed. And who wouldn't, Pak, I guess, right? It's just interesting looking at what some of the other critics have had to say. It's interesting that they talk about how the exhibition commemorates that relationship with the city, however stretched maybe that is. And a couple of others, I think it was maybe Ken Johnson writing the New York Times, said it was the best show he'd seen anywhere in New York in the whole year. So I don't know. Do you to differ a little from some of those very enthusiastic receptions?
It's a bit too far. It's not the greatest show of his work, especially later on. He becomes a little bit inconsistent. He's not quite sure, I think, after he arrives in the States. He only spends 3 years here, but I think he begins to sort of second-guess himself and to wonder kind of what he's doing. There's a painting that he made of his wife in a blue boat that he painted, I believe, in 1950, that he actually painted over a depiction of the same exact work that he'd done 24 years earlier. And there's a question here as to why he would do such a thing. It's not quite clear why he had to go back over after he'd arrived in New York and paint the same subject again and bury, essentially, a painting that he'd done earlier. I think there's some kind of indecision. There's a bit of wavering. The work sort of becomes a little bit indecisive, I guess, is the word I would use, later on in his career. And you really do see that in the works that he finishes in New York and the ones that he's doing in St. Louis just before he gets here.
Max Beckmann in New York is on at the Metropolitan Museum until the 20th of February. In fact, we're going to stay at the Met now for our next show entitled Valentin de Boulogne, Beyond Caravaggio. This takes a look at the work of the relatively unknown 17th century French artist who is one of the greatest followers of the Italian great Caravaggio. Pat, what do we know really, or what's the received wisdom about Valentin de Boulogne?
Not much. We know that he's born in 1591 in Colomiers, just outside of Paris. His early life is pretty obscure. We know that his father's a painter, but he really makes his name in Rome. He gets to Rome certainly by 1614, maybe a little bit earlier. There's some evidence that he might have been there sooner. But even in 1614, as soon as he gets to Rome, he really begins to establish himself and to develop a vocabulary, a formal vocabulary that comes directly out of Caravaggio. And he really is a follower of Caravaggio. So Caravaggio's great innovation was essentially to depict the everyday people of Rome. And sometimes when he'd painted religious scenes, he would paint, there's a famous painting, for example, of the death of the Virgin, where she's surrounded by the apostles. And everyone's really quite impoverished in the scene. Their feet are dirty. Everyone looks tired and old. And essentially what Caravaggio is doing is taking away the kind of rarefied sensibility that had animated the Renaissance paintings of religious scenes. And Valentin really follows in this tradition. And so we don't know that much about him. He only made about 60 works. 45 are in this show, including, this is quite remarkable, every single work that belongs to the Louvre. So it's really an opportunity for people in New York to see works that otherwise are really quite inaccessible.
We'll talk a bit more about that inaccessibility in a moment, but tell us more about what the works are, the 45 of the 60. Is it all works from those years in Rome? Is it the Roman pictures mainly?
It is, yeah. So it basically covers the years 1614. I believe the last work is 1631. He dies in 1632. The works really vary. He's interested in painting scenes that depict everyday life. So there are scenes that depict gambling, musicians. There are scenes that depict fortune tellers. But then he also does depict religious scenes. And he really does depict them much in the same way that Caravaggio would. They're very dramatic. There are wild differences between light and dark and kind of immediately contrasting in a small section of any single painting. And some of the best works, there's an early one from 1614 that depicts the martyrdom of Bartholomew. And it's really quite a violent painting. Bartholomew was flayed, and the work depicts him being tied to a cross as one of his tormentors is cutting away at his skin. And Boulogne really lived in a violent world. There's a nice catalog essay about the kind of violence of the Roman world that he partook in. And he knew painters who were involved in murders, etc. And you really see that in a lot of the work. They are really quite dramatic works and really quite striking. It's really quite an ambitious sensibility that he developed. And it's a great show. It's a really beautiful exhibition.
And Pat, tell me a bit more about then the echoes, I guess, of Caravaggio. Is it in that drama? Is it in the sort of sumptuousness, the richness of colour? I don't know, maybe almost a touch of the melancholy that seems to strike a lot of the sitters in his works. Is that where the echoes of Caravaggio can be, well, not rather than heard, actually seen?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think even more specifically, Caravaggio, because he's depicting everyday people, he inaugurates a revolution, not just formally, but also ethically. There's an art historian, his name is Roberto Longhi, who really rediscovered Caravaggio in the 20th century after he'd fallen out of favor for some centuries. And he wrote that basically it's an ethical attitude towards man that changes in Caravaggio's pictures. So it isn't simply a formal revolution that Valentin is following up on, but he's really kind of following through on a different sense of moral imagination for how paintings can be made, how people can be depicted. And also, importantly, just on a formal level, they both are proponents of pittura dal naturale, which means painting from life. They're painting directly from models instead of having these intermediate preparatory sketches or diagrams. And it's all part of this sensibility of living in the immediate moment and seeing what life is like on the ground and depicting from that.
Well, and our listeners can see these works. Valentin de Boulogne, Beyond Caravaggio, is on at the Met until the 22nd of January. Pat Probrick, thank you very much for joining us today on the Monocle Arts Review. Now, we're bringing things back to London, and in fact, just around the corner from here at Midori House, the Gallery of Everything is an intriguing art concept launched by curator James Brett that explores work made by non-academic and private artists. The gallery's just opened a new space on Marylebone's Chiltern Street in an old barber shop. Here, James has created a space with paintings, sculpture, and interesting installations from unusual artists. Its first show is called Jarvis Cocker's Journeys into the Outside, an homage to the 1998 TV series by the popular musician. And more recently, for the Christmas season, they're also showing some beautiful snowflakes created by Wilson Bentley. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco paid a visit and spoke to James himself.
We are sitting in this rather nice, slightly chilly barber shop, which really is still a barber shop because when we were able to install ourselves, we thought, wow, it's really important, the history of this place. I mean, I like history. I like sort of what was. And this is where, well, I used to get my hair cut from time to time, maybe more often a shave. We discussed the shaving. Yeah, my uncle used to get his hair cut here, my cousins as well. And actually, I just recently heard this famous story where my uncle came in, parked his car outside, said, I'm going to get a haircut, and if I don't get a ticket, you can have the money I'd have to pay for the ticket to whoever it must have been, at Giovanni, I guess, or another of the hairdressers here. Anyway, he didn't get the ticket, and it was the biggest tip ever in the history of tips. So I think my uncle was immortalized in the barber shop. But, you know, sadly, Mario, who was the owner of the barber shop, passed away. And so I spoke to his son and said, look, you know, I've thought about opening a gallery, and the barber shop is the same color as the Museum of Everything, which is a red and white stripe. And on that very flimsy basis, a deal was struck.
And, well, it's great for Marylebone, you know, because, you know, usually you would expect perhaps a state agent to be here instead of a gallery. So that's quite a nice thing. And tell us about the concept. What are you trying to show here at this space? Do you plan to have how many exhibitions a year, for example?
Basically, I run the Museum of Everything, and I probably should tell just listeners in case they don't know, the Museum of Everything, apart from being the greatest museum in the world, according to my mother, is a traveling organization which presents and promotes artists from different pathways. So people who make art for other reasons than commerce, some of them have disabilities, some of them are just very unusual, and it's another type of art that often doesn't get recognized. So the gallery sings from a similar song sheet, but it's to do smaller shows. You know, in the museum, we do massive shows. Our next one is in Australia. It'll be like 2,000 artworks. And the gallery is a little space, so we wanted to do modest shows, maybe every few months, see how we feel, see if something's popular, it'll run a bit longer. We won't run too much ahead of time because I think it's really good to be able to be spontaneous. So, you know, you never know. You might discover something on your way home. You want to be able to do a show. And a lot of our artists are older, so you don't want them dying before you can do the show. It happens. So, you know, we're the reclamation society. We're there to promote and present and celebrate the living. So that's the sort of plan. And it'll be mixed shows. So from people all over the world, all different types of characters, contemporary, historic, and some solo shows too.
Well, let's talk about some of the characters. We have here a work by Jarvis Cocker. Can you tell us a bit more about it?
This is a show inspired by Jarvis Cocker. But Jarvis and I became friendly because we're both aficionados of these untrained artists. And he'd made this movie. And we used to show it when we had the museum in Primrose Hill. And it was great. He visited all these crazy places around the world and met dozens of people who had created them, these homes that had become museums and giant three-dimensional home sculptures. And that film was called Journeys into the Outside. So when I bumped into him over the summer, I said, listen, I'm opening the gallery. I don't have an idea. Why don't we use the film? And we sort of went, okay, yeah, why not? And so we thought of some of the artists he'd interviewed in the film or he'd visited their spaces. So Howard Finster, the American preacher, Nek Chand, who was this Indian man who made a kingdom in Chandigarh in secret, and a few other characters besides. Chomo, who's a very strange French reclusive art maker who had a sort of mystic, slightly hallucinogenic practice. We stuck them all in here, and that's the show.
Talking about it, Howard Finster, we just have a huge Santa Claus just in front of us.
I was wondering if you'd noticed that.
It's quite small, I would say. I'm joking.
It's available if you'd like to acquire it. We put it here. You are sitting in the chair that is there for the purchaser. I mean, it could be very good for the Monocle office. It might inspire a bit. Maybe it's not so Monocle as it.
Maybe you should buy for next year's Christmas market, actually.
Oh, what a brilliant idea. I accept. No, I mean, well, Howard Finster, I mean, I should point out this is about 6 foot tall, maybe 7 foot tall, but it's a giant Santa Claus. And Howard Finster was this car salesman originally who the word of God spoke to him through his fingertips and told him to start painting pictures. And he did. And he would make these paintings, number each painting. So behind us, there's a row of these very unusual paintings also by Howard. Some from the Bible, some with these ideas of cars, because he thinks cars are like, you know, the transport is also a way to communicate God's word and electricity. But Santa is a more populist one. So I thought maybe it was good it being Christmas. We've got one Santa and then we've got 16 snowflakes. And that's my Christmas thing.
That was James Brett from the Gallery of Everything, which is open now on Chiltern Street here in London, just around the corner from Midori House. Jarvis Cocker's journey into the outside is on until January. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Our producer was Holly Fisher, and thanks too to Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when Georgie Rogers will be in to talk music with Andrew Muller. But for now, from me, thanks for listening. Goodbye.